What would you say if I told you there was another universe inside of our own? A much smaller universe on the microscopic and even nanoscopic scale, that consists of objects that are too small to be seen with the naked eye. A realm of cells, molecules, atoms, and particles, governed and organized by extremely sophisticated biological networks, molecular systems, anomalous physical laws, and primeval technology that far outsurpass our own. Would your intuition tell you they were developed? Or designed? This is Acts of 20, Love, and Fate. Hello dear listeners. Good morning and good evening. You are listening to Acts of 20, Love, and Fate, a podcast of spirit and science. In this episode, we will be talking about the concept of irreducible complexity, the complexity of microscopic machines, and the probability of DNA. Be mindful. Victory lies just ahead. Before we dive into the details of this next section, let's define some more terms so everything is thoroughly clear. Whenever I reference the word chance or chance hypothesis, I am referring to the proposed scientific explanation for the generation of all genetic information in our DNA, a process that relies solely on random occurrences. This is similar to flipping a coin or rolling dice in terms of randomness, and is the primary argument for the origin of life of the chance hypothesis. I use the word materialism and naturalism equivalently for the most part in this series, though both words should bear definitions. Materialism is the scientific theory that physical matter is fundamentally, and solely, the ultimate reality. All processes and phenomena can and should be explained solely by manifestations of matter. Naturalism is similar to materialism, but it specifically refers to natural or scientific laws as adequate explanations for all phenomena. Now on to tiny engines. I want you to imagine you are an early human that has never seen any kind of technology before, beyond a spear or maybe a wheel. Let's also imagine that you are traveling through an empty valley. If on your travels you saw a rock on the ground, it probably wouldn't hold your attention for long. Nothing unusual about this object as it is very common in this area and it matches your natural surroundings. So, you move on with hardly a glance. However, if you were to see a ticking analog clock on the ground complete with springs, wheels and ratchets all moving harmoniously together, or maybe even a running car engine in the middle of the valley, you'd immediately know it was not built by random occurrences, but rather that it was designed. Even though you don't know what the engine is, or who built it for what purpose, you know it was not a product of natural causes. In other words, the moment you laid eyes on the engine, you immediately and correctly inferred the existence of a designer, a mind that created the invention that you see before you. But what about much smaller engines? There exist biological engines that are less than a nanometer long, consisting of parts equivalent to the modern engine. Structurally, it possesses a cylinder block, a crankshaft, and pistons that are as small as nature and physics could possibly permit. Like any minimalistic modern engine, if you remove any one part from it, the entire system would fail. Would you conclude that these tiny engines were designed as well? Or, that they are the product of chance over time? Let's start with a study where Japanese and German scientists remark on the unnatural amounts of complexity in what they call tiny engines. These are the very smallest of nature's machines, and they beg the question, where and how did they originate? Consider the inconceivable odds it would take to develop these proteins to the equivalent complexity of a modern engine, in a step-by-step, evolutionary manner. This quote begins. A group of Japanese scientists exploring the crystal structure of the F1 ATPase enzyme discovered nature's own rotary engine, no bigger than 10 billionths by 10 billionths by 8 billionths of a meter. The tiny motor includes the equivalent of an engine block, drive shaft, and three pistons. It runs at speeds between 0.5 and 4 revolutions per second. This motor not only ranks as the smallest ever seen, it also represents the smallest motor that the laws of physics and chemistry will allow. Take a moment to think about how difficult it would be for neo-Darwinists to explain in a step-by-step, non-question-begging way, how a molecular machine like this could have ever assembled all of its parts by chance, one at a time, and maintained its primary functions all the while. As another scientist concisely put this problem that neo-Darwinists must explain. It would look a lot like trying to change a bus into a submarine one part at a time, all while it is traveling at 60 miles per hour. Remember that it was Charles Darwin himself who said in his book, The Origin of Species, published in 1859. If it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed which could not possibly have been formed by numerous, successive, slight modifications, my theory would absolutely break down. Following this sentence, Darwin states that he could find no such organ during his time, leading him to his conclusion. But, He amends himself immediately by saying that there are, no doubt, many more organs that exist which have not been discovered yet, leaving plenty of room for the refutation of Darwin's theory. The flagellar motor and the T3SS. Let's now look closely at a specific molecular engine that has been well documented in scientific research. Specifically, at the now famous bacterial flagellar motor and its 30-part rotary engine. It is a source of locomotion in many bacterial species, and is driven by the rotation of one or more long flagellar filaments, each powered by a bacterial flagellar motor. The motor is a rotary nanomachine that rotates at several hundreds of revolutions per second, embedded in the bacterial cell membrane. A study in 1996, led by Lehigh University biochemist Michael Behe, examined the flagellar motor of Yersinia pseudotuberculosis, a bacterium that causes gastroenteritis. A large part of the thesis of Behe's research, summarized aptly in his book Darwin's Black Box, concerns his attempt to show that complex molecular machines could not have been created in a gradual, stepwise fashion, as predicted by neo-Darwinism. As Behe saw it, the simultaneous coordination of the flagellar motor's many parts resulted from an intelligent designer's mind, and not as the result of an undirected evolution from simpler precursors. There was an eventual rebuttal by a critic of Behe, a biologist Kenneth Miller of Brown University, where Miller suggests that the development of the flagellar motor may have arisen in a particular, but still evolutionary way. He hypothesizes that the function of the flagellar motor wasn't always that of a motor, but rather that it performed a slightly different function in its evolutionary journey through time, before becoming a motor. He then references a tiny molecular syringe called a type 3 secretory system, or T3SS for short. The T3SS is found in bacteria and is associated with the flagellar motor, but more importantly, the molecular syringe is found in bacteria that do not possess flagellar motors. This is critical to Miller's hypothesis. The type 3 secretory system is composed of 10 proteins that have close cousins, or homologs, in the 30-protein flagellar motor. And, because this tiny pump does perform its own function, Miller intimates that the flagellar motor may have arisen from the T3SS. Behe, however, still maintains that the flagellar motor was created before the bacterial T3SS, and that the motor is the aboriginal system. Other ID theorists have suggested that the T3SS is the result of degenerative evolution, that is, the loss of genetic information necessary to create various protein structures. In this example, it is the loss of genetic information that codes for parts of the flagellar motor. A small side note should be mentioned. These scientific inquiries regarding the flagellar motor and the T3SS are evidence of the theory of intelligent design, also called ID, generating new research questions. This will be significant in a future episode to address the counterargument. The theory of intelligent design cannot create any new scientific questions. Back on topic. The two proposed paths of thinking have led to two different and testable scientific hypotheses regarding the relative age of the flagellar motor and the T3SS genes. From an evolutionary standpoint, the T3SS genes should be relatively older than the flagellar motor genes. In other words, the T3SS arose first, and the flagellar motor second. This conforms to the developmental view that the T3SS ultimately gave rise to the flagellar motor. From a degenerative evolutionary standpoint, however, the opposite is predicted. The T3SS genes are relatively younger than the flagellar motor genes, or in other words, the flagellar motor came first, and the T3SS second. This is in accord with the design hypothesis, that the T3SS is the result of a devolution of the flagellar motor. In summary, both of these hypotheses propose differing causal histories to explain the origin of these molecular machines. Both theories oppose each other, and thus create testable predictions about their gene age. This can be investigated by analyzing acquired phylogenetic data of flagellar systems in bacteria to evaluate the relative gene age. As it happens, current research has shown that the T3SS genes are younger than the flagellar motor genes, unmistakably suggesting that the flagellar motor arose first in time, followed by the devolution into the T3SS. This provides strong, initial confirmation of the design theoretic hypothesis concerning the origin of the flagellar motor. This conclusion is further supported in the book Evolution of Bacterial Type 3 Protein Secretion Systems, by microbiologist Milton H. Sayer Jr., where he makes the following statement. So why haven't the T3SS diverged in structure? The most plausible explanation considers that T3SS arose late, from pre-existing, gram-negative, bacterial flagellar systems. In other words, it is hypothesized by Sayer Jr. that the flagellar motor gave rise to the T3SS, thereby again confirming the design theoretic results of the previous study. The conclusions from yet another recent study suggest that the T3SS and flagellar motor genes instead have roughly equivalent ages, implying that they were created more or less at the same time. However, the reasoning of the researchers should be cautiously considered, as this study boldly assumes a constant rate of evolutionary change in their calculations. Put simply, they assumed DNA mutations would occur consistently and regularly throughout time, which is a very audacious and unrealistic assumption to make, and so their calculations should be taken with a healthy grain of salt. What's more, even if their calculations were indeed accurate, the conclusion of the study would still be consistent with the possibility of independent design, or rapid devolution of the T3SS from the flagellar motor, and thus would still challenge the neo-Darwinian position of evolution from simpler precursors. The origin and complexity of life. The previous discussion may seem a bit overwhelming to some, but it is well worth understanding in order to appreciate the incredibly complex foundations of biology. The very fact that life is this elaborate simply drives home another point. The very smallest and simplest forms of life that exist in this world, despite their diminutive or simple appearance under the microscope, still possess enormous amounts of complexity, sophistication, design, and exquisite detail. If biological systems on the molecular scale are this difficult to describe and understand, intuitively speaking, it strengthens the viewpoint of a designing mind as the origin of life, as opposed to simple chance occurrences. There is a concept called the law of biogenesis, that most undergraduates who majored in some kind of science likely know. Essentially, this law states that life can only be created by already established life. Complex organisms arise only from other complex organisms. This concept is fundamental to scientific orthodoxy, and was firmly established by experiments designed by Francesco Redi in 1668, and Louis Pasteur in the mid-1800s. This is indisputable. Let's ask ourselves. Where did all life on Earth come from? How did the first life appear? How was the first biological organism, presumably an ancestral and watered-down version of the modern cell, formed from strictly inorganic antecedents? In other words, how did the very first life on Earth come from lifeless inorganic materials, like rocks? Unfortunately, the law of biogenesis must be violated by those who have a prior commitment to Darwinian evolutionary theory. At some point along the timeline of the development of life on prebiotic Earth, there must be a moment where organic life came from inorganic materials, in order to hold to the theory of evolution. And so, with the intention of doing this very thing, materialists created another concept in order to circumvent the scientific law of biogenesis, a law which they are now willing to ignore, and call this new process abiogenesis. By definition, abiogenesis is the opposite of biogenesis, and boldly states that a single self-replicating protocell came into existence via spontaneous chemical reactions. Although the process of abiogenesis has never been scientifically observed, from its conception in the late 1800s up until the present day, many materialists expound this view as a certain fact, as a complete explanation for how life first began in the primordial soup. New facts are created alongside sophisticated-sounding but vague words, with authoritative-looking images, and graphs describing what may have happened, that are then passed off as hard evidence in support of abiogenesis, and thus reinforcing the neo-Darwinian position on the origin of life. To the casual passers-by, especially for someone who is not as well-versed in science or the scientific method, presenting abiogenesis in this manner can seem to be extremely convincing. And since everyone already believes it, it must then be true. Right? But just because someone can describe how something may have happened in the misty past, or present their ideas abstractly with no specific mechanistic details, or come to hard conclusions based considerably on their prior commitment to materialism, with no concrete evidence, indeed, as there have been zero scientific observations of abiogenesis occurring, does not constitute as proof of any kind, for any scientific theory. In order for abiogenesis to occur, very specific chemical reactions need to take place, though what these chemicals and reactions are, and whether they are physically plausible, anyone has failed to say. Specific reactions must take place at the right times, and under perfect conditions. As this source words it, the cell needs all its basic parts with their various functions, for survival. Therefore, if the cell had evolved, it would have meant that billions of parts would have had to come into existence at the same time, in the same place, and then simultaneously come together in a precise order. Ironically, it apparently takes a certain amount of faith to believe in abiogenesis. Up until now, no experimental evidence exists that shows scientists being able to recreate even the most basic of cell processes, or the spontaneous formation of the most basic macromolecules that all cells have, that is, DNA, RNA, and proteins, under geologically plausible conditions of early Earth. It's also critical to understand that natural selection cannot apply in this situation, since natural selection takes place only after functional genes have been created, not before. The physical chemist Dr. Jonathan Sarfati has stated. Also, when it comes to the origin of first life, natural selection cannot be invoked, because natural selection is differential reproduction. That is, if it worked at all, it could only work on a living organism that could produce offspring. By its very definition, it could not work on non-living chemicals. Therefore, chance alone must produce the precise sequences needed, so these simulations do not apply. Hopefully, the previous quote made it clear. Abiogenesis is nowhere near as established as the law of biogenesis, and should only be considered as wishful speculation of past events. No current study has been able to create any realistic experiments that reflect this. Being a professional molecular biologist, let's talk about biomolecules. We will now redirect our attention to deoxyribonucleic acid, or DNA. For those who are not familiar with this molecule of life inside of every living cell, we will now cover the basics. If you've taken a general biology course, you may be familiar with many of these terms. DNA, and the probability of DNA. You've surely seen visual representations of the double helix in movies, shows, books, magazines, and social media. DNA is the hereditary molecule in the cell that carries the genetic instructions in all living things. It includes instructions for development, functions, and reproduction, and are all passed from parent to offspring. In the human body like your own, all of your cells have the same DNA, with some exceptions. DNA codes for traits as diverse as the color of a person's eyes, the scent of a rose, or how bacteria infects another cell. DNA can also be rearranged in its transition from organism to organism, reshuffling the information, such that the molecules are arranged slightly different from that of the previous generation. This unique pattern of DNA arrangement results in each organism's unique physical characteristics, its phenotype, and genetic characteristics, its genotype. Alongside three other macromolecules, i.e., protein, lipids, and polysaccharides, DNA is essential for life. DNA, or deoxyribonucleic acid, is so named after its physical structure. The deoxyribo refers to the carbon-based sugar molecule ribose, which is attached to a phosphorus-containing region called a phosphate group, that consists of one phosphorus atom bonded to four oxygen atoms. Additionally, the ribose sugar molecule is also attached to a nitrogenous base, a nitrogen-containing region. These nitrogen bases are called nucleotides, and occur as one of four types. The four types of nitrogen bases are named adenine, or A, thymine, T, guanine, G, and cytosine, C. The nucleotides are typically referred to by their single-letter codes, A, T, G, and C. They are attached together to form two long strands that spiral to create the double helix. If you imagine DNA as a ladder, the rungs are the nucleotide bases, and the side rails would be the phosphate and sugar molecules. Similar to the way that letters in the English alphabet can be arranged to form words, and words into sentences, the order of the nucleotide bases in a DNA sequence form genes. To put it very simply, genes are the language of the cell, and tell cells how to make proteins, generally referred to as encoding. Therefore, the nucleotide sequences that constitute a gene have to be organized and arranged very precisely, i.e., possess a specific complexity, in order to impart meaningful information to the cell. This is as opposed to a random arrangement of nucleotides, thrown together in a haphazard way, which is what neo-Darwinism suggests. This would only yield nonsensical information or no information, in the same way saying random words in the English language in order to describe how to bake a cake would create incomprehensible gibberish. Let's listen to the following quotes regarding the severe improbability of DNA, and all the specifically complex information within it, arising by chance. The complexity and intricacy of the DNA molecule, combined with the staggering amount of chemically coded information it contains, speaks unerringly to the fact that this supermolecule simply could not have happened by blind chance. It is not possible for a code, of any kind, to arise by chance or accident. A code is the work of an intelligent mind. Even the cleverest dog or chimpanzee could not work out a code of any kind. It is obvious then, that chance cannot do it. This could no more have been the work of chance or accident, than could the Moonlight Sonata be played by mice running up and down the keyboard of my piano. Codes do not arise from chaos. Now listen to this source. Atheist Richard Dawkins has admitted, the more statistically improbable a thing is, the less we can believe it just happened by blind chance. Superficially, the obvious alternative to chance is an intelligent designer. That is the very point the theist is stressing. An intelligent designer is demanded by the available evidence. The astrophysicist Dr. Carl Sagan said the following about DNA. The information content of a simple cell has been estimated as around 10 to the 12th power, or 1 trillion, bits. He put this number into perspective. If one were to count every letter of every word of every book in the world's largest library, over 10 million volumes, the final tally would be approximately a trillion letters. Thus, a single cell contains the equivalent information content of more than 10 million volumes. In other words, the amount of information inside of a single cell possesses more information than the world's largest library. It's vital to note that nothing inside of a cell will function, unless everything, including all of its DNA and the information encoded within it, works at the same time. Can you imagine a library's worth of words and sentences all simultaneously working together to build a car, a restaurant, a zoo, or even a small city, all at once? DNA could not have gradually come into existence, even in the very simplest of cells. As this source states it, the simplest organism capable of independent life, the prokaryote bacterial cell, is a masterpiece of miniaturized complexity, which makes a spaceship seem rather low-tech. This very concept will be revisited and discussed in more mathematical detail in a future episode. An intelligent designer? As we carefully unpack the theory of intelligent design, listen to this quote from a fellow research scientist, theist and former atheist, regarding his view of the information problem in modern evolutionary theory. It may be long, but it's well worth your due attention. The 4-character nucleotide alphabet for DNA prescribes information for the 3.1 billion long nucleotide helix of life for the human genome. This code could not have arisen by chance, described as the probabilistic mechanism of neo-Darwinian evolution, given the severely insufficient time required by this theory to develop de novo genes. De novo, a Latin phrase, in this context means something new from nothing. We continue. The information in DNA is similar to textual information used by human intelligence to communicate ideas using human language. While mankind uses text and drawings for design, this designer uses DNA sequences to design life. While the theory of intelligent design does not explain, nor attempt to explain, who the designer is, the theory does not need to in order to still have theistic implications for those who believe in the Judeo-Christian God. Mankind was created in God's image. Some believe that this image refers to the intellectual image. Although mankind's intellect is uncomprehendingly inferior to God's, it is still sufficient to rule the earth, and many acknowledge God's creative powers. The chemistry, physics, and mathematics behind DNA demonstrate an intelligent designer, who has fine-tuned the physical constants to such a degree that the smallest variation in value would negate the formation of life. Generally, simple randomness and chance cannot create at least 500 bits of information from simple building blocks, as functional information can only originate from intelligence. Music, books, tax forms, a cookie recipe, and computer code are examples of information generated by human intelligence. So, who is this creator? Is it Buddha, Muhammad, Krishna, Ra, Yahweh, or some other transcendent being? In my view, if the understanding of the Christian Bible is valid, and your knowledge of science is sufficient, you can determine the validity for yourself. You may be wondering, how then could so many believe in the idea of spontaneous creation of life? If the idea is so hard to believe, why are materialists so willing to cling on to concepts like abiogenesis, while simultaneously being willing to overturn a well-established scientific law like the law of biogenesis? The following quote illustrates the issue at hand in a much more poignant fashion than I can. Stop and think of all the works of nature around you, on earth and in the heavens. First, consider the many kinds of planets, stars and galaxies. Each is its own marvel. Second, consider all species of plants on earth. There are millions, diverse in color, shape, size, beauty, and length of life. The point? As fascinating, marvelous, beautiful, and amazing as are all the things described here, nothing is as amazing as the human mind. It is the absolute pinnacle of all living organisms. None can doubt this. Think of what man has been able to produce. He can build houses, make smartphones, trains, automobiles, planes, rockets, computers, and other sophisticated devices that are almost limitless in complexity and usefulness. So why would highly intelligent, educated men believe false ideas, and even willingly deceive people, into disbelief regarding God? Get this. They do not want a God telling them what to do. They cannot have that. In their world, God must not exist. They want you to agree because, like misery, darkness also loves company. I will close out this topic by posing a question to you. Who, or what, do you think created your mind? In Psalm chapter 139 verse 14, King David made the declaration, "I am fearfully and wonderfully made." Indeed, there is a rapidly growing body of evidence that this is the truth of the human mind. So, what kind of miraculous power would it take to create your mind? You have no doubt noticed the case for intelligent design is being gradually built up throughout this podcast series. We have found in this episode that irreducible complexity is an unavoidable obstacle that materialists must explain, and the example of the bacterial flagellar motor and the T3SS shows us precisely how this idea applies to cellular mechanics. Design theories can generate predictions and testable scientific questions, thus making a strong case for the plausibility of intelligent design's ability to progress science. There is a sheer implausibility of DNA when considering probability, and the information within it, being generated by mere chance, is already made starkly clear in this episode. The so-called words and sentences, or genes, that constitute the very specific and functional instructions for the cell, only exacerbate this issue. Functional information this specific could not be generated over time, in slight successive modifications, as Neo-Darwinism purports. Imagine warming up some alphabet soup on the stove for dinner. But when you remove the pot cover, instead of seeing a random placement of letters from the soup, you instead see rows of complete sentences detailing instructions on how to assemble a radio. Would you think this could happen on chance alone? If we accept the law of biogenesis because we have evidence of its operation occurring in the past as well as the present, then it would be just as reasonable to reject belief in abiogenesis, because of the utter lack of physical evidence. We cannot accept abiogenesis on the grounds that it must be true because it would otherwise contradict general evolutionary theory. The fact that scientists have never observed abiogenesis occurring in nature, as well as the fact that there has been no proposed credible explanations for abiogenesis by evolutionary biologists, illustrates why biogenesis is a scientific law, while abiogenesis is not. I hope you are beginning to see how difficult it would be, and the transcendent power it would require, for a first force to create something as sophisticated as the human mind. We can reason that a transcendent, cosmic mind is required by just observing the complexity of creation within us and all around us. Because it is the human mind that is the pinnacle of all creation, complete with our creative powers of reason, logic, intelligence, thought, volition, ingenuity, and free will, indeed, I do not exaggerate when I say that your created mind is, by far, God's greatest design. In the next episode, I will introduce probability, the mathematical branch concerned with the likelihood of an event to occur, and its relationship with information. You will see how the probability of information occurring can be measured empirically, and how these concepts relate to proteins. By the end of the episode, you will understand the profound inadequacy of materialist evolutionary hypotheses to explain the origin of life, and that it is mathematically impossible to deny the required presence of a mind that has left a signature in the cell. There is much more fascinating information coming. This is Paul Joshua, ever may your future be bright, and thank you for listening to this episode of Acts of 20, Love, and Fate.